An insider's take on weighing up the burdens and the joys of democracy in a place that was unused to it, like Indonesia. A noted Indonesian human rights activist, Usman Hamid, has been visiting Australia for the past fortnight, offering his assessment of the state of tolerance and fairness in his home country, just ahead of taking up the role of inaugural chief of a new Amnesty International office that'll open next month in Jakarta. Now, many Australians and Indonesians have been profoundly shocked by the fate of the Jakarta governor, known as Ahok, recognised as competent and effective, but now in jail for blasphemy. And this week, the Jokowi government introduced regulations designed to curb certain extremist groups like Hizbut Tahrir. So what do we make of these developments? Usman Hamid, I'll be keen to hear your insights. Welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you so much, Sheridan. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you are opening a new office in Indonesia for Amnesty International. Why is that needed?
Well, Amnesty International is trying to move closer to the ground, given political change across the globe, moving to the global south from the north. And I guess this is very important, not only to closely monitor or continuing Amnesty's work on the ground on Indonesia, but also, more importantly, is to connect Indonesian human rights movement to the worldwide social movement on human rights.
So you think it's been a little bit separate, do you?
I think so, yeah.
Because I think the sense is that there's been a lot to occupy you as a human rights activist in Indonesia for quite some time. Indeed. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, indeed. I think many scholars believe that Indonesia has a very vibrant civil society, including human rights defenders community. And I've been very grateful to be part of the wider human rights movement. But of course, it is a challenge to really improve the state of human rights in Indonesia.
Well, let me ask you a blunt question. Is it things going forward or backwards in your view?
I have a mixed feeling about that question, actually. So on one hand, there has been, you know, an increasing cases of intolerance, the closure of places of worship, or even the recent case of the governor of Jakarta. He had a very substantial loss, even though he had a very high approval rating given his good performance at the office. But however, just a month after he lost in the election, he was found guilty for blasphemy. And then a month later, he's in jail. And just the night before I came to Australia, I visited him in prison. He's in good spirit, although he can't really avoid his feeling that he's very disappointed with the way blasphemy charge imposed against him for committing no crime.
Well, it's an extraordinary story, that, and we've covered it quite a lot. I mean, he's in jail for 2 years, and I know there are considerable fears voiced out loud by his family and others about his continued safety in the jail that he's likely to be sent to if he's not there already. What's your judgment about that?
I was asking a question, a very simple question to Ahok when I visited him in prison. So why didn't he go for an appeal? I mean, if he believed that he is not guilty, I think he should go for an appeal. But it seems that he has, you know, number one, it seems that he doesn't want to be seen as challenging all of the intolerant conservative Islamists. And also he seems to be reluctant to do the appeal given the political tension among his supporters as well as his opponents. And he just doesn't want to make his friend, which is Joko Widodo, the Indonesian president, to be in another trouble. So that I believe that there are many Indonesian citizens who are very concerned about his case and are now trying to convince the government to revoke the blasphemy provision from the law and to stop criminalizing people for their peaceful expression on religious issues, also religious discourse.
Now, I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. When you said political tensions, even within his own supporters, what do you mean?
There has been, like, you know, thousands of people went on the street in support of Ahok in response to, of course, hundreds of thousands of Islamists that hits the streets of Jakarta in late 2016. And it was considered to be the largest popular mobilization coming from the Islamist corners. So he believed that if he rejected the conviction and then go for an appeal, it can send a signal to his supporters to keep pressuring the government, to keep mobilizing people on the streets. And he just...
It's too dangerous.
...think that this is not the right way, given the situation of minorities in Indonesia, not only non-Muslim minorities from the ethnic Chinese descent, but also many other minorities, Muslim minorities such as Ahmadiyya, Shia, including LGBT in Indonesia.
I had heard that there were actually considerable numbers, but within among influential Chinese members, because he's a Chinese Christian, who were annoyed with him for having taken the risk of even going anywhere near a discussion about Islam, and that they really were angry with him.
Well...
While feeling for him at the same time.
Right. I mean, Ahok is, I mean, the governor is someone to be considered as, like, you know, I mean, I feel like he is a very tough-talking guy, a very tough-talking leader. But everyone agreed that he's very clean politician. He's not corrupt. And
sure,
he is trying to improve the state budget, the Jakarta arrangements of budget. He improved all the public services, social service in Jakarta area. And that's the reason why his approval ratings based on the polling data have shown a very high level of approval rating, like more than 70%. But however, more Muslims apparently in Jakarta do not want to vote for him, even though they feel satisfied with his performance. So this is a very weird assessment.
Yes, it certainly showed, it was certainly an insight into something about attitudes to religion or public mm-hmm. Islam. There's no doubt mm-hmm. about that. But at the same time, of course, you have the man who was the head of the FBI, the Islamic Defenders Group, Mohammad Razik, is sort of hiding away somewhere in Saudi Arabia, the man who sort of led the charge against him on related pornography charges, and that's also part of this brew.
Mm-hmm. I think this is, you know, this is a very, very unusual or something. The legal action taken by the government is a questionable legal tactics
against,
especially
Rizik.
Because against Rizik Sihab, the mm-hmm. leader of Islamist Defenders Front. Primarily because the government or the police charged him for the pornographic laws. So this is the law which is very multi-interpreted and
sure.
which is, you know, criminalizing a very private consensual sexual relationship between, you know, Rizik Sihab and, you know, a woman. Of course, the case or the charges will undermine his popularity or his credibility. However, I think the government should go after him for the crimes he committed in the past, or allegedly incitement of violence that he and his members have committed in the past.
So that leads me nicely to that question then. How do you judge the health of Indonesian democracy, a very new democracy, and President Jokowi in the midst of it? For instance, he's announced efforts just this week to ban the Islamic group Hizb ut-Tahrir. Now, is this helpful?
I don't think it is helpful. I mean, of course, it is. It can be seen as some kind of judicial stick by the government against the rise of intolerant conservative Islamists. However, by crossing the line, by, you know, crossing the basic principle of freedom of assembly, freedom of organization, or freedom of speech, I don't think it's going to be useful for Indonesian democracy. And instead, it opens up for a more authoritarian policy in the future. You know, today it may be against the Hizb ut-Tahrir Indonesia, but next week or next year, it's going to be against Amnesty International or against any organization considered to be critical against the government. However, we are aware that members of Hizb ut-Tahrir, do advocate for incitement of violence or other discrimination against Muslim minorities such as Ahmadiyya and Shia. So instead of banning the organization, I think the government should take a stricter legal action against such discrimination and violence committed by their members.
And amidst all this, there have been some significant attacks on gay groups, gay bathhouses in various big cities across Indonesia. And any leftist groups, I understand, who still get tarred with the communist brush, for goodness sake. Why all this crackdown now?
I think it is because of the non-government actions, such as the Indonesian Council of Islamist Scholars and Majlis Ulama Indonesia that has issued a fatwa against the LGBT in 2015. And it is also because the increasing hostile environment has been fueled by reckless or inaccurate statements made by public officials, including public official working on security areas, Minister of Defense, Chief of the Indonesian Armed Forces, and some other civilian public official. And the most concerning issue to me is the fatwa of MUI that has an effect in the government policies. I think the increasing intolerant case under 10 years of Yudhoyono's administration was also triggered by a number of fatwas issued by Indonesian Council of Islamist Scholars since 2005. I mean, the MUI, the Islamist Scholars Council, have been there for many decades in Indonesia, but it has never had any effect during Suharto's era. But since Sudhoyono's era in 2005, it has effect on the government policies. And as a result, at that time, the government issued joint ministerial decree banning certain minorities whose teachings deemed as heretical or deviant.
Well, thank you very much. That's been an unintended consequence of democracy, obviously, what you're describing. I really thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.